Welcome to Local Motion. I'm Allie Lightfoot. Today on the show, it's all about cars. Montrose producers Phil Ward and Diana Bashar talked with local car dealers, mechanics, and collectors. We'll start with a piece from Phil Ward, who spoke with some Montrose car dealers about what you should look and listen for when you're purchasing a new car.
Take me riding in the car, car, take me riding in the car, car. Take you riding in my car, car, I'll take you riding in my car.
I grew up in a car family, GM and Buicks to be exact. The one lesson I learned early from my father was to listen to the engine. It could tell you if it was smooth sailing or if there was trouble around the bend. Out of college in the 70s, my first vehicle was a VW. Fun cars, but you really had to listen to the sound of the engines. Traveling cross-country from Louisiana up the East Coast and down the West Coast, I remember listening mile after mile to the sweet sound of a smooth-running car. And then I remember that dreadful feeling when the sound changed to the pop and clatter of something worse. Most car enthusiasts raised on public radio know the sound of click and clack and know the first question they usually ask callers, what did your car sound like? If you remember the movie Apollo 13, you know it was not the sophisticated instruments that told them they had trouble on the way to the moon. It was the sound of that bang that told them, Houston, we have a problem. With summer coming around, and the heat rising and vacations around the corner, we decided to go out and ask two local dealers in Montrose what kinds of sounds they listen to when they're getting used cars in, and what kinds of sounds a car buyer might listen to or a vacation traveler might listen to, from the good, the bad, and the scary.
Engine, it goes drr-drr, engine, it goes drr-drr, front seat, back seat, boys and girls, take you riding in my car.
Jan's here at her place in Montrose, and she deals mainly with used cars.
I've been selling cars since 1989. Most of them come from Arizona. No mag chloride, none of the harsh weather issues, no rust. Most of the miles are good highway miles. They're not like stop and go like they are here in Montrose. But I try to get 9 at a time, which is a transport load.
When they get off the truck, you got to evaluate them. When you start them up, what do you listen for?
If it has a miss, you can hear it. You can hear it in the exhaust. You can also feel it in the exhaust. If you put your hand over the tailpipe, you can feel it.
Mm-hmm. Do different cars have different sounds that you've gotten used to?
Yeah, they do. They do. Each car has its own, its very own sound. As if you have a dog at home, it knows the sound of your car.
What car out there on your lot now do you think has a really nice sound that you just identify with?
You know which one I like the best? Is my own car. Mm-hmm. It's an Audi TT. It has its own sound. Right now, it has an issue.
Was it a sound? Could you tell by the sound?
Yes.
What did you hear that bothered you?
At a stop, if I'm there for a few seconds, it'll go, at least that's how I describe it.
Uh-huh.
Of course, my husband hates hearing that because he does not like working on my car.
So when you get some in, is there, for instance, does a Chevy sound different than a Ford? Does a four-cylinder sound different than an eight-cylinder?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I was just going to say. A four sounds different than a six from an eight. Turbo sounds different. Diesel sounds different. They all have a different sound. Like I said, if you have a dog, he knows the sound of your vehicle. Or you would know the sound when a friend pulls up. You know the sound. You know who that is, mm-hmm, by the sound of the vehicle.
Let's say I'm buying a car. Okay, I can come in, look at it. I can drive it. But I should listen to it too, shouldn't I?
Absolutely. You should listen for a lot of things. You should listen for squeaks. You should listen for whistles. You should listen for turn the air conditioner on and off. If a belt is slipping, you're going to hear it. When you turn tight corners, listen for all of those sounds. When you go on a road test, don't turn the radio on because you want to hear the sounds because you're going to pick them up. You're going to pick up noise in the brakes. You're going to hear a lot of things, and some are just normal for that vehicle. If you're driving right now, say a little sports car or something, or an old grandma car, it's going to sound different.
I'm Danny Castle with Castle Auto Sales. We've been here for 40 years now. My dad actually started it. It's the only job I've ever had. I've worked here for 38 years.
And Danny, when he says he's worked here 38 years, he means in Montrose, right?
I mean for Castle Auto Sales.
Right, right here in Montrose.
Yes, so. In Montrose, yes.
Okay. We've been listening to cars, and tell me in your own opinion, when you're listening to a car, whether you're getting it in to trade or buy or sell, what do you listen for?
I listen for a miss in the engine. If you feel you can feel something or you can hear something, it's just not a steady running motor. That's basically what you can do. You can almost always tell if there's a miss or something like that, or noise, of course, like a knock or something. But
well, I know in the morning I'm kind of hard to get up and get started. You'd like to wait until the car is warmed up before you really evaluate it?
Well, yeah, most of mine when they come in, like if somebody's bringing it in to trade it in, that's going to be warm when it gets here. Mm-hmm. And a lot of cars will make a car that has a, it takes a little longer for the oil pressure to get up. It might have a little lifter noise or something when it's cold first thing. That usually is not a big deal.
But I would say buying a car in Gunnison, Colorado in the wintertime, that car is going to sound differently than buying it in Montrose in the summer?
Most of the time, but once one's warmed up a little bit, a miss is a miss, and that isn't going to matter where you're at.
Okay. What other sounds do you listen for? Belts?
Yeah, you listen for that. You can listen for air conditioning if you want to try the air conditioner. If that's a problem, you might hear a noise there. Just a regular squeak or something like that's not a big deal. When you go drive one, you listen for like a wheel bearing noise from the front or a brake squeak. Always, that's something that'll tell you whether the brakes are all right or something like that. But
I've heard those are hard to hear when you're in the car. Do you like to take somebody with you, or do you like to be in the passenger seat when you're actually listening?
I'm a one-man show here, so I do everything myself. Yeah, I'd like to do things a little different, but no, everything I do by myself.
Let's go out and listen to some cars, and you can give me your opinion of them.
Okay.
Okay, before we start this car up, we're out at a truck, and Danny's going to start it and then tell us about it. There goes the hood. I'm going to stand back a bit so we don't peek out. And listener, if you can tell me what this is, you're a steely-eyed car mechanic. Here we go.
This truck here, it's kind of hard to tell standing in front of it, listening to the engine, but visually you can see that the motor's got quite a bit of a miss in it. It's moving back and forth. I think as we move back towards the tailpipe, you'll hear the miss a lot more prevalent than you do here at the front.
Okay, let's do that. By the tailpipe now. It's pretty loud. But you can hear that up and down.
Yeah, huh? The truck's loud, and that's just the exhaust. There's nothing wrong with that. I believe they've probably straight-piped the pickup. It probably doesn't have a muffler on it, to be honest with you. But if you listen to that up and down deal, that's your miss in it.
Uh-huh.
six car.
By the way, that was a Ford 250?
Yes, Ford 250 with a V10.
Okay. V10. Heavy duty. See if you know what this sound is. Okay, what do you say about this one?
This truck's actually a 2004, and it's a Chevy with a 5.3 V8 in it. The truck's a high mileage truck, but I can't see nothing, no miss on the engine. I can't hear anything. Let's walk back by the tailpipe.
So that engine sounds good to you.
Yes. And the other thing on a, this, I know we're talking radio, but on a visual inspection, when you walk back by a tailpipe, also look for smoke or look for a black tailpipe. A tailpipe that's clean, that's just the regular rust color or whatever. That truck's probably all right, that vehicle is. It's not an oil burner or anything. If you have a really black pipe or something, you might have a oil problem or a fuel problem too. Will show up in the tailpipe.
Okay, next car. Danny's working on a truck right now because another issue is not the engines themselves, but the keys. Now they have keys that have security, and if they think you're not who you are, it won't start. So Danny's had to play around with this one. It sounds like he's got it started now. See if you can tell the difference on what the sound is on this one. Okay, tell us about this one.
This is a 08 Dodge with a 6.7 Cummins diesel. A diesel, they're always going to have a lot more motor noise than a gas engine. And so you just have to kind of listen for something out of the ordinary on it. I mean, they're all going to make noise like that. But you can also still go back to the tailpipe and tell if there's a miss or something. Now, a diesel will have you turn on the key and let the glow plugs light up the engine, and then it'll start. But then a diesel needs to warm up a little bit before you take off and drive it. And that's in any climate. You just need to let a diesel warm up just a little bit, yes.
You're going cross-country in a diesel. You see truckers leave their engines on. Would you recommend that for just a normal truck, a personal truck?
At one time, I would have said that, but on these new diesel engines, I was reading an owner's manual the other day, and it tells you not to let them warm up, not to leave them idling at an extensive length of time because it can do damage to the engine.
Okay. Let's go on to one more car. Okay, how do you tell when a diesel is bad?
They'll all make that kind of noise, but a deeper knock that sounds down in the engine, and I have heard it before, that means you've probably got an engine problem with a rod or something like a gas engine. It's just a deeper knock. And then also you want to look on the exhaust on a diesel. If you see one with a smoke pattern, because they'll all blow out a little bit of smoke. That's just a diesel. But if you see one with a smoke pattern that's not just a consistent smoke, if you'll see it puffing, that means there's something wrong with it.
Okay. Okay, we're going to start a car. Oh, we're going to have to open the hood on that one. Okay. Okay, what about this car?
It's an 03 Chevy with a 4.3 V6 in it. The engine's idling just fine. You hear nothing on it. I think the tailpipe will show the same thing. And I know there's people out there that can tell the difference by just listening to a V8 or a V6. Myself, I don't think I could tell the difference. If all I heard was the noise, I wouldn't be able to tell this engine from the 5.3 V8 that we listened to a minute ago.
And then I noticed when you started up, and this is the first time you started this morning, that it went up to a higher idle and came back down. Now, this is normal, right?
On all these newer fuel-injected cars, that's how they're equipped. They do that automatically. When you start one, they go to what they call a high idle, and then they'll drop back on their own just as soon as they warm up. On the old cars that was carbureted, you remember on a... when you started the cars, they would go up to a fast idle, and then in a few minutes when the car warmed up, you physically kicked your throttle a couple of times, and that kicked them back down to a lower idle. These new fuel-injected cars is just all automatic.
Okay. Okay, our final car on this is a surprise car for Danny. It's one he sold me a year and a half ago. We're going to start it and see if I've maintained it or what's wrong with it. Maybe I need to go to the shop today. We'll find out in just a second.
This is an interesting one to do because you can hear a little bit of valve train noise in this, that little bit of rattle. This is a four-cylinder with overhead cams. And they'll be a little bit noisier engine than them V8 and V6s we listen to, and that's just how they sound. The camshaft on them and the lifters are on top of the motor instead of down under the head like's in a V8 or a V6.
And this is why you have to do the timing belt.
That's correct. And they've got a timing belt that, and everybody knows, probably everybody knows now, when that timing, you want to replace them timing belts, because if you don't, when that timing belt breaks, you might do damage to this top of your engine.
Now, I've noticed something that bothered me. I've noticed something that's bothered me, and you might have picked it up. Did you hear that little squeal right when I started?
Yeah, a lot of cars will do that, and that might just be a belt or something. Might be a little bit too tight or even a little bit too loose, and it might just take care of itself. It wasn't probably anything to worry about.
Okay.
In my opinion.
Okay. Well, now I have a good running car. I think I go drive around and see how it works. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Climb, rattle on the front seat. Spree out, sprattle on the back seat. Turn my key, step on the starter, take you ride to my car.
This is Phil Ward, an independent radio producer for KVNF Radio.
Trees in the houses walk along, trees in the houses walk along, truck in a cart in the garbage.
You're tuned into Local Motion on KVNF. I'm Allie Lightfoot. Now we'll hear from Diana Bashar, who interviewed Alfredo Enrique of A&A Auto in Montrose. Alfredo and his brother Arturo specialize in custom auto repair and restoration. Here Alfredo explains how they got started.
Me and my brothers, we always messed around with cars. I've always had a passion for older cars, and we've always been working on, whether it be our own cars or our friends' cars. And as we went going, me and my brother, we worked in the restaurant for a long time. And from there, you know, we wanted to be able to own our own business. And I mean, because we always had people wanting us to work on their stuff. So from there, we started working on people's cars, and we ended up opening up our own business. We stopped working at the restaurant. Well, we worked part-time at the restaurant and in our business to keep them both going. And then once it started taking off, you know, we started just working on cars.
And do you have a favorite part of the whole process when you work on a car? Is it stripping it down? Is it building it up? Is it adding the sweet hookups? What is your favorite part, or some of your favorite parts?
My favorite part is when I see the customer's face once their vehicle is done. I think that to me is probably one of the better parts, knowing that the customer is happy with their vehicle.
Yeah, how many vehicles would you say you've done or fully done? Do you take a vehicle from the basic shell and build it up?
Well, we've gotten cars to where we've built them from the ground up. We have a car that we're building for a customer in Denver. It's a 1966 Chevelle Supersport. That car, he brought it to us, and all we really had was just the body. And we ended up doing the frame, the suspension, the body. I mean, we ended up doing everything. We're getting ready to put it back together. We just got it out of the paint booth yesterday. And we do them from the ground up. We've probably done, in the last 10 years, we've done close to about 20 to 30 cars restored. And we do it from all over. I mean, we got customers here in town. We got customers. We've sent them off to Wyoming. We've sent them off to Phoenix. I mean, we've done cars for a lot of people out of state. And it's just people that drive by and see the work that we have parked out front. They stop in, they like what we do, and then we just get the job.
I have driven by and I've seen a lot of your cars for sale. I noticed one time I was driving by and there was a huge amount of those cars, and you said it was a car show. Could you speak to a little bit to us about your car shows?
Yeah, we had a pretty big car show. It was our second year. We've been putting car shows on for a long time, but me and my brother decided to do the car shows here in our location. One, people already know where we're at. Two, it's pretty easy to come in and look at the cars. But we last month we had our second year Cinco de Mayo car show. And we had, our first year we had 54 cars. This last time we had 72 cars. And the car show has grown because people really like the atmosphere. People like what they see. They like the new cars. We had about three different car clubs here. We're not into the car club scene. We're here just to help everybody that is in the car club.
What is the current car culture? How would you describe it? What's the music involved? What's the current trends that you've seen?
It's really evolved within the last couple of years. I mean, a lot of the, you would call baby boomers, are coming back into where they want, you know, the car that they had in high school. And that's where we come in, where we're building like these 66 Chevelles, the 69 Camaros, the 57 Chevys. People in that era right now are what we're seeing a lot. When me and my brother grew up, for us, it was a lot of the lowrider scene. We were into the lowriders and stuff. But as our business has evolved, so has our thought of building cars. People take pride, whether it be an older car, a European car, a sports car. They take pride in their car, and no matter what kind of car it is, people will always, they're always going to put money into their car. I think it's a symbol for a lot of the guys that are out there, even women. It's a big symbol of who they are, the car that they're in, the car that they drive. So for us, we've seen a lot of change. Right now, you see a lot of these kids that are 17, 18 that are into the Hondas, that are into the Subarus and stuff like that, where if you look back in time in the 50s, it was having the 20s and 30s roadsters and stuff like that. Then you go up into the 70s, you wanted to have the 50s style cars. And you go up into the 80s, you want to have the 70s and 60s style cars. Well, it's just been one of those ongoing changes, and we've seen a lot of that. For us, it's great that we get to mix every single era and try to help everybody out with the different styles that are out there. My personal style is probably from the 20s all the way up to the 70s. I think those were those were real cars back then. The cars nowadays, they're all plastic. They really, like I say, everybody has their own style. Me personally, I whatever's old, I like it.
Thanks so much, Alfredo, and I wish you the best.
Thank you.
You're tuned into Local Motion on KVNF. I'm Allie Lightfoot. Today on the show, it's all about cars. Montrose producers Phil Ward and Diana Bashar talk to people around our listening area who are passionate about cars. Next, we're going to hear Diana's interview with Orville Proctor of Orville's Classic Cars in Delta.
Hi, you hear the sound of Main Street, Delta, Colorado. I'm here at Orville's Classic Cars, Used Cars, Collectibles, and I'll be talking with Orville Proctor. He's owned this business for over 30 years. Orville, could you tell us a little bit about how you got into the business?
Well, I always was interested in cars, even in high school. I worked on a lot of 56 Chevys and stuff that, I'd go down and buy them for, $40 to $60 a car, and then put different trannies in them or whatever they needed to get going, and clean them up and sell them for $300-$400 just so I was making a killing on them. So it was just kind of my start, just on the And I just kind of got to where I liked all of them and just started collecting anything, mainly just trying to save them from the crushers and stuff. And
that's great. And how many cars are you in possession of right now?
Well, right now I've only got about 400, but I originally in 08, I was kind of forced into having an auction because my neighbor turned me into the county. So they kind of got on my back about my collection, and I had over 1,000 cars in my first auction.
What would you say is the process of collecting a car? Say I wanted to restore a car. What would I need to do after I buy one from you?
Well, you know, it just depends on what you want to do. If you want to do a frame-off restoration, or if you just want to have it fixed up and looking nice to where you can drive it and enjoy it. And, you know, it just kind of depends on what you got in mind. A lot of times you can do a frame-off restoration, you're looking at quite a process of doing it. And sometimes it's easy to tear them apart, but it's a whole lot harder to get them back together. So, you know, it's just kind of what a person has in mind they'd like to do with it.
Well, after I buy a car from you, where do I get the parts? Is there a parts place around here to get those needed parts to restore a car?
Well, it just kind of depends on what it is and what kind of car it is. You know, you get like the Mustangs and Chrysler products like the Roadrunners and GTXs and stuff like that. You can, and the Camaros, Chevelles, and you can buy just about any part you want. You know, there's just a lot of aftermarket places out there. But if you get off into like the Studebakers or Plymouths, and even some of the Buicks, so the older Buicks, you know, you're pretty much would have to look around and find somebody that has an old car where you can get parts, but because they just don't reproduce the stuff with those cars. So like I say, it just kind of depends on what kind of car you end up with. So.
Well, how many cars would you say or estimate that you've restored yourself?
I've never actually restored any of them. You know, I keep so busy dragging them in and in all my other projects and stuff. You know, most of the cars that I have for my personal use is just nice old original cars and like where I can drive them. But I have trouble finding time to drive and enjoy them, let alone work on them. So just trying to fix cars up enough to get them on the lot and resell them. It just keeps me busy doing that. So.
Well, thanks so much, Orville, for talking with me. I know you're really busy.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Local Motion on KVNF. I'm Allie Lightfoot. Thank you so much to our Montrose producers, Phil Ward and Diana Bashar, for contributing these pieces. Stay tuned. Coming up next, As the Worm Turns.